Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross, and my guest this week, well known in the Midlands, it's Curtis Davis. Curtis, how are we doing?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah, very good. How are you?
You look well, you look fit. Mind you, always look fit to be perfectly honest, but you look fit and well.
I hope so, yeah. I know I'm a bit older now, but I like to think, at least in my face, I look fit. So you just have to see me running around to see if I look fit properly.
You're a good looking geezer. You don't look like a centre half. They should be smashed noses and everything.
I've managed to break my nose 3 times. I'm just lucky that the doctors managed to reset it on site. So I've managed to keep it reasonably straight. Yeah, a few scars, but I think I'm lucky that I've managed to cover them up a bit.
Well, what a career. And still going, of course. Luton, West Brom, Aston Villa, Birmingham City, Hull, Derby County now, and England under 21s. I mean, you're still going, but it's been one hell of a journey for you, isn't it?
It has. It's been obviously a long road, and it only dawns on you every time pre-season comes around. Someone says to you, "Oh, what pre-season is it now?" And this year's pre-season 21. Oh, and, you know, I'm playing with lads that weren't born when I did my first pre-season. So for me, that's when, you know, in my body, I feel good. I feel like I can keep going. But when there's lads on the team that could literally be your kid, that's when it starts to, you know, we've got a young lad here who's 17 years old. Effectively, he could be my son and playing alongside me. So it is a crazy one to think about. But the main thing is, as long as in my body, I feel good and I feel like I can actually still give something on the pitch, I'm happy to still be out there.
Welcome to my world. You do get to an age, though, when your brain writes checks, your body can't cash.
That definitely will come. And I think that's the big thing. That's it. And that's what they say about football. You know, when you've been fortunate enough to play at the level of Premier League and obviously play in Europe and play obviously top end championship, stuff like that. You know, I'm not against dropping down the leagues and things like that to carry on playing, but I don't want to drop down the leagues to survive. I'd only want to do it if it's a case of I still can back my body to do a job to help my team. I don't want to be turning up somewhere based on what I've done before and I can't actually produce it. So I know when that day comes, I will be bold enough to say enough's enough and walk away. But fingers crossed, it will stay away for a couple of years at least.
So you've mentioned your age. I'm going to test your memory. Going back to Wimbledon as a youth. I can't remember. Was Terry Burton would have been your manager, would he?
No. So as a kid, when I came through the, I was only at the academy for 1 year. So it started from, I played Sunday League football through school, played district football, went on to play county football for Essex. And then from there, a teacher at another school that worked with Wimbledon called Martin Heather contacted my PE teacher and said, I've seen Curtis play. Have you got any others that you can maybe recommend to go? And it was only me he sent because this just shows the sliding doors moment. There were probably 4 of us that were on the same level of ability, but I was the one he could trust. In terms of, I wasn't going to go there. I wasn't going to let him down. I was obviously a polite kid. I was academic. So, you know, I'd earned the right to go, basically. So he sent me. I didn't let him down. And fortunately for me, after a trial, I managed to get a year schoolboys form just before the YTS. But the bad luck for me was that during that year, I started getting growing pains in my hips, sciatic pains in my left hip. And it put me out for like about 4 or 5 months. So to miss 4 or 5 months of a 1-year/9-month contract and was tough to take. But in my head, I was thinking forward and I was just, what I'll do is I'll stay here. I'll get the best training I can possibly get. So when I was actually fit the back end of the season and you know, the writing was on the wall that I was probably going to be released, I made sure that I got all the training in, used all the facilities to the best I could. So that when I did potentially in the summer go on trial, I was ready because there's no point of sulking about it, no point of crying about it. I made sure, obviously, I did my GCSEs, I signed up to college and everything like that. And I was just hopeful that when I went on to go and get a trial, I'd be able to succeed.
So, obviously, you went to Luton, but who was the inspiration as a young kid? Because obviously football was in, you wanted to be a footballer. Who was the inspiration behind that?
The inspiration, I think, In terms of famous inspiration, it was, you know, I grew up a Man U fan. So I just love Eric Cantona. He was one of my heroes as a kid, especially, you know, every kid, every footballer, I think as a kid was probably a striker. So I used to play with my collar up and think I was the man like Eric was. So he was probably my inspiration in that side. But, you know, my dad's my driving force. My dad's everything. You know, it's the things like, you know, driving you places. You know, it's one thing for Sunday league games when they're local, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 20 minutes there. You know, my dad, is through youth teams and through playing for Wimbledon, having to go to all these different cities and stuff, he's been up and down the country. So, you know, when it came to eventually going to the Premier League, you know, he's up at Middlesbrough, he's up at Sunderland, he's down in Plymouth when I've played there and stuff like that. So he's the guy that has been my driving force, always had a really good, honest relationship in terms of after a game, win, lose or draw, we used to have a debrief, and it would be pick the bones out of it. But that's kind of what's given me my level headedness and that drive to succeed, that, you know, I know that if I come off the pitch, I can always be honest with myself because my dad has taught me that.
Sounds like he was as much a friend as your dad, similar as I have with my son.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. I think when you have that relationship, that, you know, if I did something wrong, if I was late home or something like that from meeting my friends, I'd soon know he's my dad, he's not my mate. But in terms of the respect, so, you know, you talk about pushy parents. My dad identified that I was a good player, but he knew I was driven.
Yeah.
So he didn't feel he needed to be pushy. He just felt that he needed to guide me in certain little areas. So, like I say, after a game, playing a Sunday league game, say I was a striker, obviously, I might have scored 5. And he'd say, yeah, but you could have scored 6. Because it's just that keeping you on the ground. And then the day where you lose 2-1 and you don't score, it's like, yeah, but you set up the goal, you did. So it's always having that balance of keeping you grounded, but also lifting you up to not feel too bad. And that, like I say, even through my young career in the Premier League, we still had that relationship, you know, like I said, driving back from a Middlesbrough or a Sunderland with my dad back to London, we'd still be having those conversations in the car. And his opinion has always been one that I've always respected. Not always above my manager, of course, because his opinion matters. But in terms of honesty and brutality of saying something, he will never mollycoddle me, but at the same time, not knock me down too much.
Brilliant. And I should have known you're a Man U fan. You're from London, of course, so I should have known.
Yeah, well, Man U fan. I had the season ticket at Leighton Orient. So Leighton Orient's my team, my local team, my hometown club. I love them. Obviously, it's still a dream of mine to play for them. But yeah, it's Man U, you know, as my dad from Sierra Leone, so it was Liverpool or Man U. He chose Man U, therefore I was Man U.
And rightly so, you follow your dad.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the Leighton Orient thing, because it's one of those few grounds, Brisbane Road, that I absolutely loved working at and visiting. I mean, I remember going there with Birmingham in 72, the promotion year, and winning there and getting promotion to the old First Division, now the Premier League. So it's not a stadium, it's a football ground, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a proper ground. Obviously, it's got a bit more glamorous lately, you know, since Barry Hearn. Yeah, and he put some money into it. You know, there's the hotel on the corner, there's the apartments and things like that around it. So he's invested well in the team, he's invested well in the club, and that kept the club going for years and years. He was brilliant for the club. I'm just glad to see that they're back in the league under good ownership now. And they're looking forward. I'm hoping that this year they can have a good go with Kenny Jackett in charge and have a charge towards getting back in, an experienced manager, and a charge towards getting back into League One, you know, because it's crazy being an Orient fan. I've been to 2 playoff finals to watch them. Lost to Scunthorpe. And also went to see them a week after losing the FA Cup final. I dared to return to Wembley to watch Leighton Orient against Rotherham, and they lost after being 2-0 up as well. So that was that was tough to take. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's your local team. It's in your blood. And
correct.
And yeah, it would be a proud moment for me and my family if I could pull in that shirt.
But your big breakthrough came, of course, at Luton.
Yeah.
And who was your boss then? How did that happen?
So in the youth team, it was John Moore was my youth team coach. And basically the way it worked is, like I say, being an academic and at school working hard and stuff like that, we did CVs at school. So working CVs towards getting a job when you leave, when you turn 16. So I kind of already had that in the back of my head. But once I got released from Wimbledon, I thought, well, at that time, you know, not every 16-year-old's got an agent. So I was of the mind, don't ask, don't get. So luckily the internet was around. It might have been dial-up, but I still managed to get some websites and stuff. So I was I went on the websites, got the club addresses for about 30-odd clubs in the southeast, and tried to find a name of the head of youth recruitment or youth team coach, and so at least I could address it to somebody. Mm-hmm. And and I wrote off a football CV. So, you know, I had my stats in terms of height, weight, teams played for, positions played, you know, and just for, like I say, don't ask, don't get. If nothing comes back, you haven't lost anything. And in that meantime, I had signed up to college, so I had a backup. And fortunately for me, when I wrote to Luton, they phoned me back, I think, 2 days after the letter got sent. So for me, that was a signal of intent. I wanted to go in somewhere and train and work hard. And luckily, I went there, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because, you know, it's a club that was steeped in history of producing young players. We had a great youth team. A lot of us went on to play in the Premier League. And it was just the right place at the right time that, you know, we went through a sticky patch where we had Kinnear as the manager and young players were never, ever going to get a chance. And then once Mike Newell came in, unfortunately, administration hit, and that's what gave us all a chance. But ultimately, the cream rises to the top, and us young players weren't in the team just because we had to play. We were good players. And, you know, the likes of myself, Kevin Foley, Leon Barnett, we came through the team there and ended up going on to play in the Premier League and getting sold on for I think £3 million each. So it shows that we were ready for it, and it was the right club for us, and we complemented each other, that we had the blend of youth and you know, that freshness alongside some experienced, hard-nosed players, you know, like Stephen Howard, yeah, Kevin Nichols, Steve Robinson, Chris Coyne. I played centre-half alongside Marlon Beresford in goal. It was the best blend for me to step into a team where I'm learning from Marlon Beresford behind me, Chris Coyne beside me, because me and Kev Foley played on the right side of defence. So we had a relationship in terms of we wanted to make sure we looked after each other, but we still needed to be guided by those more experienced players. And it was it's the best education I could have had.
What a learning curve that was.
Yeah, but that's it. But I said it's a strange one, because having eventually got my pro, my first year as a professional, we won the league. I got in a team of the season, and I won player of the division. So it's easy to think you've cracked it, basically, you know. Yeah, so it's easy to think you've completed it, as they say. So it was a really strange, surreal season. But I said I was just a kid then that was playing football. Obviously, you know, you're doing it for your living, of course, but I was loving it. I was enjoying it, playing alongside some of my youth teammates, people that I want to, like I say, I had that edge of on it, that I wanted to make sure he succeeded with me. And that gave you that extra edge. And the fact that shortly after getting promoted to the Championship, the Premier League came calling, was a surprise. But it's something that I took in my stride and I was ready for.
Is it fair to say that you've never been short of confidence or confidence about your own ability?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think when you reach a level and you think, well, I need to work a bit harder to work on this or work on that, you know you need to tweak things. But I always back myself, you know, and that's the way I've always been. If you go into a situation where you doubt yourself, you're losing already, whereas you're better off to go in and believe in yourself and G yourself up and give it all you've got, and you might succeed. So that's kind of the way I've been. I didn't face a challenge that year in League One that made me ever doubt myself. And maybe that's the naivety of a young 19 going on 20-year-old that, like I say, it's my first year as a professional. I've won the league. I've won the team of the season, and I've become player of the division. And then in my first six games in the Championship before I got sold, we played Palace, who just got relegated from Premier League at Palace, beat them 2-1. Played Southampton, just got relegated at Kenilworth Road, beat them 3-2. Drew with Leeds, who came down 2 years before that, beat Leicester at Leicester. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. We had some really good results and good performances that made me think, well, these, like Andy Johnson got the Golden Boot the year before and I played against him and I did well. So in my head, I was like, well, if he got the Golden Boot and I did well against him, why can't I do it up there? And that was my mindset going into the Premier League. I know it's a totally different task and it was an adjustment of mindset, but in terms of my individual ability, I was ready.
Was it a big, you know, I mean, it was a big move, West Brom. It was Poppy a manager, wasn't it, Brian Robson?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Did you feel more pressure going to a Premier League? Because you played without fear in your early days, but all of a sudden now, you're at a big club, massive expectations. Does that affect you?
I think the thing that affects you is it wasn't my individual performance. I wasn't worried about that. Like I say, I've just been signed as one of the record signings for the club. So I see it as a massive confidence boost. You know, Brian Robson, Captain Marvel, England and Manchester United captain, has just signed me for £3 million. Wow. So what more confidence do you need? He knows a player and he signed me for £3 million to play in the Premier League. So for me, the only adjustment I had to make was my mindset about the way I live. So I was kind of the idea that when I was at Luton, we only lost 6 games that season. But I wouldn't, I'd lock myself away when we lost the game because that was my mindset. It's almost like, because we've lost the game, you're not meant to enjoy yourself. So you can't go out with your mates and things like that. You can't have a laugh or anything like that. So I think I had to adjust my mindset because, you know, going from being at the top end of the League One table to being near the bottom of the Premier League table, there's going to be weeks and weeks where you don't win or weeks where you lose in a row. So it's important that I had to readjust myself and be, you have to enjoy your life as well as football, because especially moving away from home for the first time properly, obviously I've been in digs, but being on my own in Birmingham, it's a big step at 20 years old. So I had to adjust to make sure that, you know, I could still enjoy my life. I could still be seen on the streets. But what I will say is the Premier League, it's just the factor of, if you make a mistake in League One, it's going to be Luton fans and the opposition that know about it. If you make a mistake in the Premier League, there's 10 million people watching Match of the Day on a Saturday and you're getting hammered about your performance. And that's before social media. So I think it's always the way that, you know, that's what I had to adjust to, that, you know, the microscope is on you. So as a 20-year-old, I found that if I had an okay game, it would get blown out of proportion that I was a worldie. But then if you have a bad game, it's like, oh gosh, or you make one mistake, it's the end of the world. So I think that was the exposure of the Premier League that you had to quickly adjust your mindset to after being at the top of League One.
A lot of clubs were interested in you at the time. Why West Brom though?
So for me, I didn't have an agent. My deals at Luton were done with the PFA. And I didn't have an agent. You know, I had a few agents trying to talk to me, but it's like they came along as soon as there was a bit of interest. It wasn't they wanted me from a kid when they'd seen my ability and tried to nurture me and give me advice. They came when the money started sniffing around. So I didn't want to give anyone that payday. I knew my ability would get me somewhere, not an agent. So what happened was, I believe there was interest from Birmingham. I think Mike Neil might have even told me that there was interest from Birmingham. He said, but I want you to keep going, keep kicking on. And then when it came to it, I was, you know, I played the game against Millwall, which was my last game for Luton, scored the winner. And I was asked in the press conference, you know, is this going to be the last action we see of you in a Luton shirt? And I was like, you know, until I'm told otherwise, I don't really know. Like, you know, I haven't got an agent that's basically on tap waiting for it to happen. Until I'm told otherwise, you know, I'm happy to be here and, you know, I've got a contract. So it happened that I was in Romford shopping with my mates and then all of a sudden I got a call from Mike Newell and I thought, oh, Gaffer's ringing me on my day off, what have I done? and he said, basically, we had a bid from West Brom and we need to go speak to him because it was for £3 million and the club wanted to take the opportunity to move me on. So, you know, I went up there, I called Bobby Barnes at the PFA. And he got in contact with my agent, Phil Sproson. And we went up there and spoke to West Brom. So it was something that came really quickly. Didn't have a lot of time to think about it, if I'm honest. But it would have been a club probably that I would have chosen, because I wouldn't have been going from playing every week to sitting in the stands or sitting on the bench. I didn't want my development to stop. I went straight from playing in League One to playing in the Championship for 6 games to playing in the Premier League. And that for me was massive, because obviously from playing, I got a reputation. Rather than having a reputation as a good promising lad, I had a reputation of a player that could play in the Premier League. And that meant everything to me. But it wasn't as smooth as that, the deal. The deal wasn't done quite that easily. They tried to, I guess, take the mick, shall I say, in a polite way.
Jeremy Peace, never.
Yeah, well, they tried to basically pull my pants down, I think. I think they thought, you know, we've got a lad here. Of course, I wanted to play in the Premier League. I did. I totally understand that. I wanted to play in the Premier League. But I think I had a lad that maybe, you know, my background, they might have thought, well, just wants to play, like, yeah, we'll give him X amount.
Yeah.
And I was quite clever that, you know, they'd bought me for a near record fee. So they must value me. And I didn't see any value in that contract. So I actually drove away and was on the M6 when Steve Bruce was ringing my agent and saying, tell him to wait. To go to Birmingham in the January, because he didn't have the funds right then. But in the end, Brian Robson, who wasn't there himself, got on the phone and somehow, miraculously, they managed to get double the deal. So it just shows that as a young player, if I didn't have that strong head and that belief in myself, like I say, to turn down a Premier League team, that belief that I'll come back again, then, you know, it would have been a totally different story.
Nigel Pearson was there, of course, as a central defender. Did that help you?
It did, yeah, because, you know, Nigel had a good career, played for, obviously, Robbo in the Premier League with Middlesbrough and had a good career, played for Sheffield Wednesday, stuff like that. So it was good to learn from a centre-half. Obviously, one thing, having Robbo there, of course. If anything, Robbo was more the good cop. And then Nigel would be the one that did the hard yards with you, and he'd individually take me over and I see it as promise. And, you know, some lads are like, oh, why is he on me? But I like the fact that he takes me aside. He goes, I want you to work on this. I want you to work on that. You know, because they're little things that take you to the next level. Yeah. Because it's easy, like I say, playing for a top League One side where, you know, I can maybe get away with, if I'm in trouble, kick it up to Big Howie. Howie's going to win the flick on, and then we're up the pitch. Whereas in the Premier League, you know, Robbo might want me to play into Ronnie Woolwork's feet, or drop it into the right back, or whatever I need to do. Do you know what I mean? So it was a totally different level, a totally different way of doing things. And I'm just glad that Nigel Pearson was there in terms of that hard kind of exterior, but still, you know, nurtured me in a almost like a son way. It was really good to work with him.
Knowing Nigel, he only puts effort into people he rates. If he didn't think you'd got a chance of being any good, he wouldn't put the effort in. So every time he wanted you to improve, it was because he rated you.
Yeah, I'd like to think that, and I'd like to think that my attitude to work, you know, I wasn't like sulking because he'd pulled me to do extra and I wanted to rush home. You know, I was in Birmingham on my own. What more did I have to do? Sitting at home on my own watching whatever Netflix or whatever was out then. So it was just one of those things that I was happy to learn and happy to listen. And ultimately, it did make me a better player.
You got on well with the Albion fans. I mean, you had a good relationship from my memory.
Yeah, I did. And that's, I can't, it's a regret of mine in terms of the way things ended. It's not a regret in what I did. You know, I had to hand in a transfer request and things like that, the way it ended at the end because of certain things that happened. But it's just a regret because I loved my time at the club. I will never say a bad word about the club. You know, I went to the club as a young kid, you know, and I left there as the second youngest captain, having played 30-odd games in the Premier League for them. Unfortunately, we got relegated, but then captained them most of the season towards a playoff final until I got injured. You know, so I feel I gave my all for that club. I wish I wasn't injured for that final. And if we'd got promoted, it would have been a totally different story. But like I said to you about that self-belief and backing myself, I had that taste of the Premier League and I felt I had nothing to prove in the Championship. And then when the option to go to, at the time I thought I was actually going to be going to Spurs, if I'm being totally honest, and potentially go home back to London. You know, the training ground was 15 minutes from my flat in London, stuff like that. That was exciting to me. But then it ended up being that I stayed in Birmingham and went to Aston Villa. So I don't think that went down as well because it, even though it's not a direct rival, I know the West Brom fans like to build that one up as well against Villa.
It's certainly, of a generation, the big derby was Villa-West Brom because they were the only two in the top flight at the time.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Wolves weren't. So it was always the big game for me. You speak to Tony Brown, his big game as a player, Aston Villa. That was the big derby for him. So I get where you're coming from. So what did Martin O'Neill say that persuaded you? I mean, it was loan for us, wasn't it? But then you signed. So what was it about Villa? Because they're another big club.
Yeah, I think it was basically the loan was a loan, but it was a loan with an obligation to buy type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they do it now where the loan fee comes in now and then the money gets drip fed through later on. I think that's all it was, basically. So it was just a case of, it didn't have to say a lot to me, Martin O'Neill. You know, my outside opinion of Martin O'Neill, of what you kind of read about him and heard about him, was the two things you can guarantee are tactician and manager. Those were the two things I kind of got because, you know, the fact that he got Leicester to the cup finals and won cups with Leicester and stuff like that, it was a big deal. And the career that he had through Wickham and his build-up, you know, so it was a big deal. And, you know, he's in this job now because he's done all that good stuff. So for me,
So how did you get on well with Martin?
I think our relationship at first, it was one where, you know, this manager signed me. You know, again, it was a lot of money. So for me, it was backing a young player to do the business. So it was a lot of money. So I believed it. Yeah, I was here to play. I'm here to play a big part. And I think it's a weird one with Martin because to say you get on well with him, I don't think that's what he's there for. That's not his job, and that's not his style as such. He likes to build up his more exciting players, the more match-winning players, to a level where they totally believe in themselves. So the likes of Gabby, Ashley Young, he put them on another level of confidence and responsibility in terms of to go and win us the game. But with everyone else, it was kind of like a hands-off, you're in my team. But, you know, it was kind of a hands-off and talk to you as you need to talk to you. So it was an interesting situation. But the relationship only breaks down when obviously things start to happen and you're not involved and things like that and you feel you maybe could be involved, or it's just when frustration sets in, unfortunately. Relationships do break down, and as a player, you're hungry to play football. You don't like being sat in the stands, sat on the sideline, and you obviously something has to give. But unfortunately, that's just the way it was. You know, I wanted to play football. I was a young player that had been in an England squad and was ready to kick on. And unfortunately, almost felt like the carpet was pulled from under my feet.
I think, having listened to you so far, you've always talked about how they've made you feel. And yet I would imagine you can't find it easier to deal with somebody who doesn't have that communication with you. I'm not saying he's right or wrong, but doesn't have that communicative way with you. I would think you would find that difficult.
I think I only found it difficult when it's one of them, when the chips are down, you find it difficult. When you're playing every game and he doesn't speak to you, of course, you don't care. Your name's on the team sheet. You know, when I'm playing 30 odd games towards us finishing the top six again, I don't care. I mean, like, I know I'm in the team, I'm doing well, and if he doesn't say anything to me, it means I've done well. It's only when you've done something wrong, he'll soon pull you and say, you do it again, you're dropped. Mm. So that's the way I took it. I didn't need mollycoddling. It's just the fact that when you're not involved, and my big thing was, I had a situation where I'd come back from my shoulder injury after the start of the 2010 season, or it might be, yeah, 2010 season, sorry. I'd come back from a shoulder injury. And I was, after that, I was kind of not seeing it again because I came back in the December. We'd signed Dunn and Collins. Sorry, it was 2009. So 2009-10 season. We'd signed Dunn and Collins. And I knew I wasn't going to get back in the team. So my idea of that was, no. I'll go away, I'll go on loan. And then I'll fight for my place because I wanted to be an Aston Villa player. I loved being at that club and loved being part of a team that are pushing as much as we can to get in that top four and potentially, you know, go in the Champions League. That's kind of where we were at the time. Mm. So for me, it was, why don't I go away, get myself back to where I can be at that level. And then I'll come back next season and fight for my place. But when I went in to see Martin, it was an idea that it was rejected. And it was like, don't be silly, son. You're going to be needed. You're going to be part of it. And like when you talk about that communication, I came out of there almost like felt like verified, or do you know what I mean? Like felt as if my existence was still worth something. Yeah. And I was quite excited by the rest of the season. But what ended up happening was I was kind of involved just to kind of keep me happy. And then as the window shut, I was kind of left out the rest of the season. So it's a frustrating one, and you know, I'd rather people just be honest than tell me that I'm going to be got a big part to play and then I haven't. And that's kind of just why, you know, like I never ever thought I should have got back in that team. That's not the thing that was the issue. It's just the fact that when you kind of told something and it doesn't go that way and you're left to rot, it's hard to take.
I would imagine that. We all see the glamour of being a professional football, Premier League. You've got it all, the money, the car, you've got everything. But we don't see this side when you're used. And players do get used. You know, I'm sure the big ones don't, but players get used. And like you were used there, you were needed because in case anything happened to the regulars, but that didn't suit you. Yeah. But you were being used, weren't you? As simple as that.
Yeah, and ultimately, listen, I was on a contract. But if the gaffer said to me, listen, we're not going to let you go on loan. We need you as backup to the team. As much as I would have hated that, it would have been honesty. So I would have just been knowing, right, I'm just going to get my head down. I'm going to work as hard as I can. And then come the next season, I'm ready to go. But I think it rumbled that there were politics behind it, you know, similar to the West Brom situation. You know, it's easy for a club to spin it one way when the player can only say what the club allow him to say. So with West Brom, you know, I had a handshake deal with Jeremy Peace that if we didn't go up, I'd be allowed to leave. But then because we don't go up, I go to see him. He says, no, we're not selling you. So after having a handshake deal with him and Brian Robson, who was the manager at the time, before he got sacked, I was told I can't leave. So that's why I end up having to hand in transfer requests to make it clear. Which is a thing I didn't want to do. I just wanted to leave amicably with the permission of the chairman. So that's one thing. And then the other side is with Martin, you know, again, if I was just told, because in my opinion, the politics were, if I played maybe three more games, I was due an extension. And I think there was a kick in that West Brom would have got more money. Yeah. But for me, it made no sense that if you just told me that, I could have got my agent onto it. I could have found a club whilst I was still at a value. But the fact that you leave someone to rot for a season and then when the new manager comes in, you still do the same, it's hard to understand. You know, if you're just honest with someone and tell them that's the reason, which I believe was, I could have made my way and gone somewhere else. But I think they maybe wanted me to be the one to be frustrated and go, which I did. Because again, when I left Villa, I had a year and a half left. I could have easily sat there and just, you know, you talk about players and being, you know, money grabbers and things like that. I could have easily just sat there and took my money in and then waited to go on a free or said, until you pay me this, I'm not going and all that. I was about playing. I wanted to play football. And then obviously in the end, I went on loan to Leicester with Sven, which in my opinion, saved my career, you know. And then I ended up signing for Birmingham in the January.
I mean, two things. One, how did it save your career? And it seems to me that in your list of things that matter, honesty is a massive thing with you.
It is. And I totally understand. Listen, it's something that I, if I'm a coach, manager, whatever, I want to take in. Listen, I know you can't be honest 100% of the time in terms of, you know, little things and bits and bobs. But if I have a player and it's of the situation where the board don't want me to play you because you've got 3 games left for a kick-in that we're going to play, I could speak to him on the level and say, I'd love to play you. Or even if I don't want to play, it's like, well, my hands are tied. I think you need to get your agent to try and help move you on. And at least you're honest, and the player then has an option to try and do that. So that's kind of where I was at with that. But I just think, yeah, I just think there's no, like, if you're able to take things on the chin like I am, you know,
yeah.
I'd rather you tell me you don't like me or don't like my ability, then I know, well, I'm not for you and I can move on. And that's fine. Like, you know, you're one man's diamonds, one man's dog's mess.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, right. I accept that. So if I'm not for you, I'm not for you. And that's fine. It's just be honest. And that for me is a big thing. But going back to Sven and going there with him, it saved my career because I was at a time when, like I said, if you're not playing football because you're injured, that's frustrating enough. But when I missed that 3 months with my injury in my shoulder and I was chomping at a bit to get back, because you've got to remember, it's a shoulder injury. So I physically was able to do loads of stuff with the ball. Like I literally had about 3-4 weeks off of the ball. But then after that, I'm working with the ball. I'm doing this, doing that, doing lots of running. The only thing I couldn't do was contact. So I felt like I was fit for ages. It's only once the 3 months went that I was allowed to do contact. I was ready at the end of December. And then, you know, you feel ready to go, chomping at the bit, and then you're denied that. And that was hard for me. And like I say, and then you end up not kicking a ball for 9 months. And then that was one thing. And then I was having things in my personal life where my relationship, my ex-partner was breaking down. And so there was a lot going on behind the scenes when you talk about, you know, people don't understand what players go through. Mm. So it is a big deal. But then when Sven came in, it was just a release. So it was a change of scenery rather than me being in at Villa and training with the first team sometimes when maybe they've had a game and it's the Monday recovery. And then I'm back with Kev on the Tuesday and playing with the kids, you know, stuff like that. It's not the way I want it to be. So to go to Leicester and Sven, a former England manager, respected manager worldwide, to sign me on his second, third day of being at the club and say, I know what you do, express yourself. That was the best words I could have. And going there and playing in the style that we played, you know, me and myself and Carl Norton on the right side of defence, Richie Wellens in the midfield, Stevie Howard up front, Matt Oakley. We had some really good players throughout that squad, and it was just exciting being part of it. And like I said, it's the most I've probably enjoyed football since that first year at Luton, simply because I felt free again. I felt like the kid on the playground, just enjoying it again. It wasn't about, what am I earning? Do we get 3 points for this game? Do we win the game? Do we lose the game? Of course you want to win games. I was just enjoying it so much being back out there because I felt like I'd been unleashed for the first time in a year. And that was just massive for me. And like I say, I think the dark days of, like I say, you're going in to train, don't know who you're training with, going in the gym, doing a bit extra, doing this, doing that, hoping for that chance, and it never comes.
Yeah.
It was just a way that you could put that behind you and just focus on being a player again, and rather than trying to be the best cheerleader / backup man you can be.
Who signed you at Blues?
So at Blues, this is another interesting one. So I'd been at Leicester just at the back end of my 3 months at Leicester. I tweaked my hamstring against Swansea, and I chose to do my rehab at Leicester. You know, that's how much I didn't want to be in and around Villa. I did my rehab at Leicester. So I was in at Leicester all the time, keeping my face in there, and was encouraged and hoping I could go back there. And what happened was I was fit in the January as such, but going back to Villa, they were of the idea that they were wanting to sell me, but again, didn't really make it clear to me that they wanted to sell me. So I was there, I kind of milked the fact that my hamstring was still sore. So looked after myself, made sure I was doing work, hard work in the gym, doing the hard running, yes, and stuff like that. But I didn't want to go out, train with kids, then train with the first team as an extra or be like a Joey, basically. That weren't for me. After the mindset I'd had at Leicester, I didn't want to bring any negativity onto myself. And then eventually on, I think it's like the 29th or the 30th, just before the deadline shut, they said I can go back to Leicester. So I was buzzing, drove across to Leicester, signed the loan deal for the rest of the season, and yeah, happy, ready to go back there. And if I could have signed permanent, I would have signed permanent, but they couldn't do it at that time. I get home, my agent rings me at 10 o'clock, says, don't go into Leicester tomorrow. Like, Villa have stopped it. And I'm like, what? Like, thinking, why are they messing around? Why are they playing silly buggers? So, oh, Birmingham want to sign you permanently. And I was like, oh. And obviously at the time, Birmingham were Premier League. Scott Dan had just pulled his hamstring off the bone, I think. Getting to the Carling Cup final. I think he badly pulled his hamstring. So he was out for the rest of the season. So I went across and spoke to McLeish and was kind of told, yeah, you're going to play and all that kind of thing. And then just never worked out. Turned up at Blues. I think they said on my scan, I had a slight issue with my groin or something. So they kind of monitored me the first couple of weeks, but it wasn't an issue for me. It was only something that showed up on the scan. And obviously didn't stop me signing there. So they monitored me for a couple of weeks, you know, so I wasn't playing then. And then, you know, they eventually get to the final where I was cup tied anyway. They win the final. And I think winning the final is probably the worst thing that could have happened to me, because once we started struggling, I think McLeish's mentality was, as soon as I can get back to that final team, that's, I see that as success.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, they're going to get me out of the jam. And I think that cost us. I think, you know, we played Liverpool away, and that this is my biggest gripe. Listen, I played some games. I played against West Brom in the league, and I hadn't done well. You know, I played in a team that had 9 or 10 changes. Didn't do particularly well. We lost the game. So that was on me, of course. But it's just, like I said to you about the honesty and the mindset. My mindset was, I'm here doing nothing kind of thing. Even though I was on the bench, so I felt like I was here doing nothing after being told I was going to play, whereas I could have been at Leicester playing every week. Even though it's a level down, I could have been playing every week and enjoying it. So my head was kind of gone with that. But like I say, going back to it, there was a game at Liverpool where I thought, yeah, finally get my chance. This is my chance now. And because I think maybe Ridgie was injured, like Liam Ridgewell. And I think Urinek was just returning from a big toe injury or something like that, that he'd been out for 5-6 weeks. And, you know, Martin Urinek was training like the last, you know, from the Thursday, say the Thursday, Friday. So I thought, okay, he's easing himself back into training. When it comes to the Friday after training, he's travelling. I just assumed it might be, you know, keeping involved in the group, you know, experience international, you know, keeping with the group, and he can help the group. And I thought, okay, fair enough. But, you know, I've had Stevie Carr telling me, be ready all week. You know, it's your time now, be ready. Go to the hotel, don't think anything of it. No one pulls me for a chat or anything like that. Literally have the meeting, the notorious meeting that you have as a player at, be it 1 o'clock, 10 past one, just before you leave to get to the ground, turn over the sheet. And Martin Urinek's playing after training 2 days and 6 weeks.
Wow.
So for me, that was a poke in the eye. That was, you know, good enough. So I just sat there in despair, just staring at the screen, and just shaking my head. Like, didn't care who saw it. And then it ended up being like, I ended up being petty and petulant. You know, we ended up, I didn't say anything because that's not my place to put the team out of. I didn't want to put the team out of a rhythm. I wasn't going to upset anyone. I'd wait to speak to the manager on his own when we got back. But, you know, we get to the ground. I'm sat there in my tracksuit because I'm number 32. I was the last squad number. So I was literally sat next to the manager in my tracksuit until 5 minutes before we warm up because my head was gone. And then we go out to warm up. And then in the end, again, not saying individually it was Martin Urinek's fault or anything like that, but we lose the game 5-0. And, you know, when you've got a player that hasn't played for 6 weeks, he's going to be at sixes and sevens at times against an average team, let alone a Liverpool team. And in my opinion, ultimately, you know, by the time we get to the last game of the season, if we'd only lost that game 2-0, 3-0, we'd have stayed up.
Of course, it was goal
because,
difference.
Yeah, because it was we were going down on goals scored, which in that Tottenham game that I played when I finally was needed on the very last day. And we were only going down on goals scored because Wolves were losing but scored an extra goal against Reading or something like that. And then we were going down on goals scored. So it ended up being that me and Roger were going up front for goal kicks, trying to win flick-ons, trying to run back to defend. And then we ended up losing because Pavlyuchenko on the break scored and 2-1 we go down. But there in, like I said, there are moments that maybe I took it in more because I felt slightly bitter, slightly upset, slightly annoyed. Maybe I took it in more, but you know, it is those sliding doors / small moments that change seasons. But the big thing for me was there were two incidents with Alex McLeish that kind of just, I had to scratch my head. Is after that Liverpool game, he pulled me in his office before I had the chance to pull him and said, "Listen, did you think you were going to play?" And I went, "Well, of course I did." I said, "There's no one else." That there was no one else. Martin had trained 2 days, plus the skipper has been telling me all week, "Be ready, be ready." And then you turn over a sheet and someone else is on it. I said, "Like, what did you expect?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, maybe I got it wrong. I should have probably played you, but you know, Martin's done so well for me." And I was like, "Well, it doesn't matter now. It's gone now. Like, what can I do now? Do you know what I mean? Like, what can I do out of information?"
Yeah.
Like, you obviously don't. Like, I was almost like, you don't back me, and then. That went out the window, and obviously I think Ridgie was fit and we got back to kind of playing a certain team. And then the next one was after getting relegated, you know, after I played against Tottenham, I come in and we had debriefs obviously at the end of the season, and the manager pulls me in the office and he's like, "The way you played yesterday, you were fantastic, you're brilliant." He goes, "Yeah, we're going to need that next season. We're going to need that, you know, to make sure we get back up." I was like, "Need that next season?" I was like, "You effing needed it this season."
Yeah.
And because my head was gone, I had nothing to lose. At this point, I'm thinking, if he's the manager, I don't want to be here. Not because I didn't like him as a person, but I just felt, you don't back me, you don't want me.
This is not personal, so, this is business.
No, it's not personal. It's not like he didn't have an issue with me as a person. That's why I've got no issue with him. Yeah. It was just a case of, you don't back me, you don't want me. So I'll go elsewhere, I'll go back to Leicester. That was my idea in my head. But obviously it ended up being that Alex McLeish left, went to Villa. And then Chris Hughton came in, and Chris was different gravy and totally different man. When you talk about honesty and man management and trying to being able to keep a squad happy. You know, this is a championship squad that we had. Fair enough, we lost 10, 11 players that when we got relegated. But he built a squad of good championship players that all could have played at any time. You know, if you swapped one for another, it wouldn't have been too much of a difference, bar probably, you know, I don't want to say it, but myself, Berkey, and maybe Marlon King.
Yeah.
Anyone else around that could have played. And he just built a team unity that, you know, he was able to have the people that weren't involved or on the bench still happy and still part of the group. So I think that's an amazing skill to have. And it's just a totally, like I say, chalk and cheese between two different managers.
I mean, why leave? Because I was out there and you played against Nacional in the Europa League. I mean, so you're obviously like the manager. He picked, why leave?
Oh, well, I didn't obviously leave under Chrissy. I stayed under Chrissy. We played the obviously 62 game season where we were in Europe. I'm sure at the European tour, I think we're still the only team to not go through with 10 points because all three of us ended on 10 points. So that was crazy. We had the FA Cup run to the fifth round, played Chelsea. You know, so it was a crazy season. We got to the playoffs. We lost to Blackpool. Obviously, I scored in the second leg. And then I was pretty much ready to go then because Chrissy left. And I was basically wanting to join him at Norwich. It was one because of Chrissy himself, you know, he was a man that I wanted to play for, but it was the opportunity to go to the Premier League again. But unfortunately, that never happened. So I knuckled down. Lee Clark took over, and unfortunately, he couldn't emulate what Chrissy did. He was a different character, you know. So to say the least. So the way obviously Clarkey wanted to do things compared to Chrissy, and especially, like I say, with a squad of probably 20 that feel they should be playing in a championship team, you know, the management side of it, man management side of it, is quite important. And maybe Chrissy had a better man management style than Lee Clark, and that was kind of the fine margin. And in the end, it was, we petered out that season. I think we finished around 12th. But no, it wasn't anything to write home about. And then I was into my last year, and it was a case of Hull came in with Steve Bruce returning after all those years, obviously after
trying to get me before, hadn't he?
Yeah, well, that's it. He tried to sign me for Birmingham. So ironically, this time with Hull getting promoted from the Championship that season, he looked at me as an option, and I signed for Hull City, which broke my Midlands moving extravaganza.
And it was a great move for you, though, Curtis. Hull seems to be a great move for you.
It was, and like I say, when you talk about moving to a Premier League club, I was obviously older, so I was never going to go anywhere to develop. You know, I was, what was I at the time? 28, I think, at the time, or 27. So I was never going to go anywhere to develop. It was about, the manager saw what I had and he wanted me to play. So me going up, if anything, I was the experienced player in the squad. I think it was only, so when I initially signed, it was only myself, Liam Rossini and Paul McShane that had played in the Premier League. And then eventually, you know, we signed Tom Huddleston, Jake Livermore, added that extra bit of quality to the group. So it was exciting for me, you know, to be back in the Premier League, exciting project, somewhere new to live, a different town, everything, you know, learning about different people, the way they do things up there, and learning the different way they say things in Hull. It was good and it was exciting. And obviously myself and my now wife, obviously Laura, you know well. We enjoyed our time up there. It was a lovely, where we lived, a lovely village, and we enjoyed our time there. And ultimately, I had relative success in terms of individually. You know, ultimately ended with a couple of relegations, which one was really sickening. The other one was tough to take, but we weren't good enough. And then another one was the second one was quite sickening because of kind of what happened in the pre-season for that to happen. It was hard to take.
What happened in pre-season then?
Well, it was a case, you know, the first season at Hull, we have the glory of, I say glory, got to the FA Cup final. I scored in the FA Cup final, end up losing, you know, so we lose that, but we stay in the league. So we kind of get plaudits for the way we handled our season, our first season back in the Premier League. Next season, tried to kick on, signed the likes of, you know, Diarmi, Gaston Ramirez, Ben Arthur. So they added that quality, but us as a team, we kind of lost a bit of identity with those players in, because we were a hard-working, solid, hard-to-beat team that would thrive on an Aluko doing something special, or a Sagbo, or Danny Graham scoring, or whoever it's going to be, someone that has that moment, like Robbie Brady. You know, that's kind of the way we kind of played. We played with a solid base, and then with those players in it, it kind of brought a different dynamic to our team. So I just think we weren't good enough to have those players in our team, if I'm being totally honest. And we ended up going down. But then obviously we got promoted via the playoffs, beating Sheffield Wednesday at Wembley. And that's the frustrating part is, you know, you get relegated, fair enough, but you managed to bounce straight back with a relatively good team. We managed to keep most of our players and we bounced back. But what happened in the end is, we ended up in the Premier League with a worse squad than we had in that Championship season, because Diarmi left to go to Newcastle in the Championship. Couldn't get him to stay. We ended up having, I think, 12 senior players at the start of the season. Start of the Premier League season, because Steve Bruce had left because he wasn't given the funds to buy players. And then it went right down to the wire that we started the season really well. We beat Leicester, who were the champions at home, and then we beat Swansea away. We were actually top. we lost to Man U last minute. But we started really well. But once we added the players, because Mick McPhailin only got the job literally on deadline day officially. It was a scramble to sign players. So we managed to sign Ryan Mason, who was a good signing, in my opinion, good quality.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to the others, but we were signing players that we could just get. You know, we
bodies in
signed
fact.
Them. Yeah, we got bodies in, you know, and there was no proven kind of, I don't need to be proven in terms of in Premier League, but it wasn't someone coming across from France that had set the world alight in France or Italy or Spain and just wanted an opportunity in Premier League. It was, you know, full due respect, we're signing players from Man United's reserves to try and step into a Premier League team and make it happen. And that's kind of where we were at. And unfortunately, you know, once we got to January, we were struggling because we weren't good enough. And then Marco Silva took over, managed to get a few more players in, a few more of quality, you know, Umanias from Everton, Ranocchia from Inter Milan, Grzycki, Kamil Grzycki. So we had a few good players come in, but unfortunately it just wasn't enough and we ended up still going down. So that's the reason that's frustrating, because if we'd have given it a go from the beginning, it might have been a different story, but it's all hindsight and all that kind of stuff. We still might not have been good enough, but it's just the fact that I felt we didn't really have a go. It's almost like we were happy to have gone down, gone up. And if we go down, oh, we'd probably come back up again. But obviously what happened to Hull is that they did go back down, but fortunately they are back up again now, which you know, it just, it's crazy how football works that can happen in that short period.
How tough is it for a player when you've got five managers in 4 years, as you had at Hull? How tough is that for a player? They all come in with different methods, different philosophies, different, you know what I mean? How difficult is it?
So I got lucky. When the other managers come in, so in terms of Slutsky and then it was Adkins coming, I'd already left, so I didn't actually have to deal with that. But obviously I had Brucey for 3 years.
Yeah.
Then I had Mick for 6 months, who Mick was brilliant. Like he was an unbelievable coach, had that balanced way of talking to people, but just needed a bit of support, I think, you know, because he was such a good coach, he had to be hands off to try and be the manager at times. But sometimes the support wasn't as good as what I think he could have had. And also think he needed support in the window first and foremost. So I think they should have given him the job 2-3 weeks before, and we might have been able to get some more experienced players in, slash all due respect, better quality players in to help us. And I think he gave his all to do the job well. But unfortunately, it was a catch-22 that he was given the job in difficult circumstances, and then he was sacked for not doing well in those difficult circumstances. He was set up to fail. But what I will say is when Marco Silva came in, he was fantastic. He was top draw, best I've worked for.
Really? The best?
Yeah, best. I'm so surprised it didn't work out with him at Everton. I don't know. What I can say is to get a group of lads that were bottom end Premier League and get us as organised as we were organised, meticulous training methods that, you know, I could have played left wing, I could have played centre forward, I could have played right back. I would have known exactly where I need to be and where everyone else needs to be in different situations. The training was like meticulous. He was a perfectionist. And that's why I'm surprised it hasn't worked out for him, or it didn't work out for him at Everton. Because I just learned so much from him. And that's me saying that. I wasn't necessarily his first name on the team sheet. You know, the back end of the season, I had an injury. When I came back,
yeah,
I wasn't in the team. But I was just learning from him, listening to him, the way he does things. And I don't know if it's because we maybe bought in more because we're a lower-end championship, lower-end Premier League team trying to push up the league, more so than an Everton team that were a team full of players that probably all think they should be playing for that team. But the problem is you've got a load of them that are kind of on a similar level, about four number 10s that all want to play number 10. You know what I mean? So I don't know if it's just by the time he named his team and then he goes through these like team shapes and stuff, that whether the rest of them maybe didn't pay attention as much. So that might have been why it didn't happen. But he's back in the job now at Fulham. We played them actually, coincidentally, on the weekend, and I think he could do a really good job there if they buy into what he wants to do. Because, like I say, I know he's meticulous, and yeah. if you've got good players, particularly at championship level, and that meticulous methods and training, I think he could be really successful.
Then comes Derby County, another massive club, Derby County, high expectations. I mean, again, another great move for you, Curtis.
Yeah, back to the Midlands as well. So it was an interesting one. I think, you know, towards the end of the season, my agent had kind of had a sniff that Derby were interested in taking me, regardless of whether Hull stayed up or went down. And it'd be a decision that I'd need to make, because I would have only had a year left at Hull. And then it would have been, do I want to maybe hanging at Hull, depending on if I was going to play or not. You know, if you're going to play every game in the Premier League, you've obviously got a good chance. But, you know, depending on what signings that Marco might have wanted to make, would I have been playing enough? And we were kind of toying with the idea. And then when basically we got relegated, it was kind of sorted, basically, that I was quite upset with kind of what happened. And I felt like a fresh start would be the best thing. And, you know, especially the manager left pretty much straight away as well, Marco Silva. It was a case of, you know, Harry, I think I was the first to go, sorry. So it was, I went because I had a buyout clause if we got relegated, and Derby exercised that buyout clause. And I signed because I was excited by the project at Derby. I saw the squad there. I saw a really experienced squad. I saw a better squad, if I'm being totally honest, than the whole squad that we had. And I saw a better chance of going up. And it ended up being that the first season there, we did get to the playoffs. We lost to Fulham, who eventually did go up after beating Villa. And then the next season with Frank, I was injured for a large chunk of it. And ended up getting to the playoff final, losing to Villa ourselves. Yeah. And then obviously Philip come in and then change the dynamics, and it didn't quite work out. And obviously now we've got Wayne, and it's just about trying to re-establish the club. When you say it's a big club by name and by stature, but we need to establish the club back to where it should be. Yeah. And we're not saying that straight away it's going to be, because, you know, if this takeover happens or it doesn't happen or whatever happens. It's just about, I think, for us now, after the disappointment of last season, scraping ourselves to stay in the league, I think it's about rebuilding step by step. I think it's walking before you can run again. I think it's making sure we establish ourselves back in the championship. Yeah. And then we can, you know, depending on where you are, that's when you can see, do we kick on from here? But I think it needs to be stabilised in terms of the right players, the right kind of earnings and stuff, rather than going down the route of, right, we're going to get this player in on twice as much as he's on and twice as much as he's on, and go for bust again. I don't think it can be done like that, because we've tried that before and it's failed, and ultimately it's left the club in the position it's in now.
You are playing for Frank Lampard and Wayne Rooney, for goodness sake. Wayne Rooney, one of the great England players. You've played against them, now you're playing for them. Yeah. Were you in awe of them, or how does that work?
No, I think I've not been in awe of many people in my career. I think the only people I've been in awe of in my whole career, David Beckham, watching him when I was in the England 21s, watching him spray balls as well as walking along the sideline at Old Trafford for the Old 21s when England played an international. He's the only player, I think. And then other than that, you know, playing against maybe Van Nistelrooy as a Man U fan, watching him, playing against him, you know, maybe I was a bit in awe of him, I guess. But like, even though Lampard's a legend and Rooney's a legend, having played against him so much, by the time I played, worked with them, sorry, the novelty had worn off. you know, you're excited by the fact that, you know, these two England legends, obviously over 100 caps for England and all the things that they've done playing for the country, two legends of the Premier League, I was excited to play for him, you know, excited to learn under Frank, particularly, you know, with Jody Morris. Jody's coaching, fantastic, fantastic coach. And then obviously Wayne then came in, who Wayne is actually younger than me. So it kind of, yeah, it's even, you know, it's even strange, you know, when Wayne first comes in the building, you heard the rumour, oh, Wayne Rooney's going to sign for Derby. You're thinking, looking at the date, thinking it's April Fool's. And then you end up walking in the building, you're like, is this really happening? And it was just bizarre. Joe, like, knew he was in America, I knew he wanted to come back, but you'd think maybe he would have got, in my opinion, maybe a better club or a Premier League club or something. But fair play to him. He came, dropped down to the Championship and signed for Derby. And yeah, now he's obviously, the rest is history, he's the manager. So I think being in awe is one thing, but being very respectful of what they can do on a football pitch. Even Frank, when he joined in, he wasn't registered as a player, but still had loads of ability. So when you've got someone that's able to do that and what they've achieved in their career and they speak, you listen. So regardless of your age, if I'm a 16-year-old kid kicking my first ball or I'm the 34-year-old I was when Frank turned up, I'm listening because I know he knows what he's talking about. And yeah, it was just good to work for Frank and obviously enjoying working for Wayne as well.
There was a time though at Derby when you thought your time was up, I think, didn't you? You thought maybe your time was up. But circumstances, you're back in the team and you're staying at the club, another deal. Funny old game, isn't it?
Well, it's... So when Philip came in, I'd recovered from my second Achilles injury. And I'm guessing, I don't know, if you'd watched videos from the team the year before, you wouldn't have seen anything of me. Because obviously I was injured, especially the back end of the season. So come pre-season, and as a player, you always kind of know, but I was always cast off in the, us footballers called the Joey team.
Yeah.
The team that's not going to play. And I found it hard to deal with because when you're returning from an injury, you want to get yourself up to speed. But the best way you get yourself up to speed is playing alongside players that are in my with all due respect, on your level. So if I'm playing in the first team as such, and I'm working with a Tom Huddleston, a Richard Keogh, whoever else, you know, working with the whole team, then, you know, you can rely on those to do something. But what happened was pre-season, we kind of, the stronger team played Burton and bashed Burton 4-0. And then the Joeys, as it were, played Granada, I think it was, and we got popped. Or Girona, I think it was Granada, and we got popped off the pitch. Like, we lost 2-0, but absolutely popped. And you're judging yourself in that performance, you start to do your head, and then season starts, and I'm nowhere near it. You know, season starts, I'm on the bench for one game. I travelled to a game and was left in the stands at Stoke, and for me, that's a big no-no. It's not an arrogance thing at all, but when you've played as long as I've played, I was 35 at the time. I'll accept if you tell me beforehand that, you know, someone's got a niggle and you might not be on the bench. I'll accept it and I'll reluctantly, obviously, travel to be a backup, of course. But when you go to a game and then you're left on the bench after staying overnight, doing all the right things, doing your right eating and everything, and then you're left off, I kind of like, I'd say to the manager that that's fine if you don't want to involve me, but just don't take me. You know, it's kind of, you know, some people want to be involved. For me, that's the worst thing you could do, because then it makes me not disruptive, because I'll still be backing the lads and everything like that, but I'm sitting there moping and I don't want to be that negative player around the lads. So I kind of have to take myself and sit in the stand away from the changing room, so I'm not upsetting the lad, not upsetting them, but moping around them. And I don't want to be that guy. And that's kind of the way I am. I wear my heart on my sleeve. And I want to play, let alone be sat in the stands. And that's the way it was. But fair play to Philip. My relationship with him was good. I always had respect for him. We had a strong relationship, because we had quite an honest relationship in the end. But eventually, unfortunately, Richard Keogh and everything that happened with that got injured and ended up leaving the football club. And he ended up turning to me. And from there, I obviously went on and ended up playing 30-odd games for him for the rest of that season. And then the start of the next season, it was back to not being involved again. So it was, we signed Mike Tavirik, a Dutch lad from Groningen. He came in and we had Matt Clark on loan. And those were his two. And then eventually used Andre Wisdom as centre half. So it's kind of like the first six or seven games of the season I wasn't involved. And then again, eventually you need to turn to me because we weren't getting results. And you turned to me for my experience and for my know-how. And we went and we beat Norwich at Norwich 1-0. I got man the match. So it's just a case of, and he said it himself that when he left, like, I sent him a message saying, like, thanks Gaffer, and you know, very respectful, because like I say, I had a strong relationship with him and his staff. I really got on with them well. But he said, one thing I'll say to you is your resilience. He said, because there were times when you know, I didn't pick you. I didn't want you in my team and I chose other people ahead of you, but you always find a way to come back and get back in my team. He said, so for that, I give you the utmost respect because you're a fighter.
Brilliant.
And for me, that was, again, that was, and that, for me, that's validation because, like I say, he was honest. So if he didn't play me, he said it was because of a certain reason. And if whether I agree with it or not, at least he gave me a reason, even though I might be thinking, you're making a mistake. But like I say, he was always bold enough to say, well, that didn't work, so I am going to play you. So he wasn't stiff-nosed to kind of cut his nose off to spite his face and say, well, I told him he's not good enough, but I told him he's not the way I want to play, and then leave me out totally. He went back to me when he needed me, and unfortunately I was able to pay that back with some good performances.
Under-21s playing for England, how proud were you to wear that three lines?
It's like, even though it is, again, it's only under 21s, but it's the proudest moment of your life. When you get to sing the national anthem wearing that shirt, it's something, like I say, you dream of. You know, I grew up a Man U fan / Leighton Orient follower. But the thing you dream of is playing for England, you know, playing for your country, singing the national anthem. And when I eventually got to do that for real, it was unreal. It was just, it wasn't pinnacle because it wasn't the full squad, of course, but it was a step that for me and in my journey of coming from a Luton team, and it's a strange one really, because I felt a bit bitter at one point. That I remember being at Luton and we just walloped the league, we got 98 points in the league, and Peter Taylor, who was the whole manager at the time, who also got promoted, he was the under-20s/under-21s manager. So he knew about me in terms of from the league. And I became quite frustrated. And Mike Newell, I think, did his nut when basically a Toulon tournament squad was announced. And fair enough, it had the likes of Stephen Taylor, Anton Ferdinand, I think Callum Davenport, maybe like a few of the players that played Premier League / Championship. But then there was like a lad from Hull that had played about four games of Hull in League One that went to the tournament. And I was left at home. And Mike Newell was like, what is going on? I just got player of the division. So for me, it was like, what's happened there? Like, it was not, you expect, like, there's no given. If he wasn't in there, you wouldn't say anything, because obviously Anton Ferdinand, like I say, strong centre halves, no problem. But it's the fact that he was in there, it was like bizarre. And the crazy thing was that, like I say, that was the June. And then I signed for West Brom in deadline day, and then I'm in the England under 21 squad. I think it might have been the first squad in October. So the politics were, as soon as I'd kicked a ball in the Premier League, all of a sudden it was justification for my place. And it was almost like now I'm good enough kind of thing. But like I say, once you actually get there, you're walking around with that England kit, even just walking around the hotel, I had a swagger in my step. Just feeling like I'm part of this group. Like, I'm looking around, like, got some great players in the change room. We've got Wayne Routledge, got Kieran Richardson, Darren Bent, Dean Ashton, Michael Dawson, Peter Whittingham, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Witts was actually my first roommate. I just turned up in the room about 11 o'clock at night. He didn't know what was going on, but we had some really good players, and I was just excited to be there wearing the kit around. Honestly, I was buzzing. It was just like, yeah, I'm an England player now. I felt This is what I want. And to represent your country is massive. I think
Brilliant.
The only thing I can say is it's people say, is it regret? It's not regret because it wasn't my choice, but the only resentment I have in my career is not being able to get that cap for the foreign national, you know, having been on the bench against Germany in Berlin and the team winning 2-1 and the excitement of that and being part of that and being part of that group and working under Capello and training with those players. It was an amazing experience, but it left me wanting more. And like I say, from going from that to not play, like obviously the rest of the season, I was kind of in 30s and because Fabio used to name the 30-man squad and cut it down to 23, but I was still in and around it. And then the next season came and that's when I had that year off of football. It killed it for me. And that was the time when it was like, well, you know, Fabio eventually left as well. So it's not even like you had a manager that had an eye out for you. And yeah, it was just a shame really that I didn't get to strike while the iron was hot. I think it's one of those things as an international. I think it's like making your debut as a young kid. I think if you're able to get that one game where you can earn the trust of the manager, he'll always come back. And that's not to say you have to be the best. You have to be a 10 out of 10. But if you just play that one solid average game where the manager can trust you, you can come back. And I just wanted that. I just wanted that one appearance to say, right, I can do this at this level. And then, you know, the manager will come back to you when he needs you. But unfortunately, that Germany game, Fabio wasn't one for friendlies. And being against Germany, I think if we'd scored and maybe gone 3-1 up, I think we might have made substitutions. A few of us were warming up at one point. But he wanted to win the game. And that's Fabio. You know, he wanted to win games. And ultimately, that's the way it goes. And unfortunately, I've got this shirt at home, but it's not actually been worn properly. So that's the only shame about it.
As we come towards the end of it, who's your toughest opponent?
Toughest opponent, I'd say, is Alexis Sanchez. And I say Arsenal, Alexis Sanchez always, because just to not get it confused, when I played him at Arsenal, I think being at Hull, I think he scored something like 6 or 7 goals against us in about 3 or 4 games. He just seemed to be the right. But I said, with the South Americans, you know, the Agüeros, the Tevez, him, they've got that knack where they don't stop working. So he would chase you. If you've got the ball, he'd chase you into his own half. And then he'd go again. And then even when he gets it, he's still got the quality and the pace to then run away from you. And then he'll come back again. You just can't stop him. Whereas, you know, traditional English players, you either get, what I'd say is you get the fast one or / hard worker, and then you get the big one. That kind of is traditional in England. Whereas, like, he was a different breed. He had the ability, he had the engine, he had the work ethic. He was willing to challenge you in the air. He was just horrible to play against, and I didn't enjoy it one bit. And, yeah, you know, he was fantastic. But, you know, I did play against the front three of Tevez, Rooney and Ronaldo for Villa before, and that was tough because, you know, you're playing against three top quality players that work hard, that graft, that are willing to put their body on the line. That's tough going. But yeah, that I'd have to say out and out, I'd have to say Alexis Sanchez.
Just, you like other sports. I mean, I know you love your boxing and basketball, is it?
Yeah. So you know, everyone keeps trying to get me into golf. I think I'll save that for when I retire, because then I can have something to get stressed out about. I like a bit of NBA. I've been to a few finals when in Miami. That's the team I like, Miami Heat. Boxing. Obviously, been to a few events with yourself. I like to keep my eye on it. I'm not a purist. You know, I won't watch every single boxing event, but I do, you know. Me and you, John. Me and you, Tom, have been around. Obviously, your son John's and watched a few events recently. Yeah, exactly. So we like to watch a few of the pay per view ones, the big boxing nights. We do have a good time. So I just like watching other sports. And with the Olympics coming up now, I'm excited by that, because track and field is, when I was a kid, was something that, you know, the Olympics is everything. You know, it's another dream that, you know, for a footballer, it's always going to be, you know, play for your country, play at a World Cup. But if you could have a chance to go to an Olympics, that would have been amazing. like in any sport, you know, just to go to an Olympics and be part of that feel, you know, the opening ceremony, everything that comes with it. I think that'd be amazing. And I'm looking forward to watching that as well. And hopefully Britain can get some golds and we can have a good Olympics after all the doom and gloom of it being cancelled last year.
I'm not going to end your career, right? But I know you're planning for a life after football. As a journalist, pundit, you're already on Quest covering the games and doing a great job there. First class honours degree in sports writing and broadcasting from Stafford Uni. Why don't you want to stay in the game as a coach or manager?
I've not decided not to. Definitely not. I think knowing my character and my personality, I will be drawn back. I will. Yeah. It's just the football side of it is, you know, I've been on my UEFA B with the FAI and this year just need to complete some hours basically of coaching, which has been hard with COVID, to basically try and get the certificate. So I'm still doing that side of things as well. But the journalism course was something that I've always done little bits and bobs for the, you know, be it for Sky, for BBC, and always kept my eye in just doing bits.
And TalkSport, of course, don't leave that.
Yeah, and TalkSport, of course, yeah. Can't leave TalkSport out. TalkSport, Quest, PLP, it's loads. But I just dropped in here and there. And I wanted to do the course because, fortunately, through your PFA, you could do the journalism course at home. And with one week in every six in the classroom. And that helped me that I was able to do a degree while still, you know, not worrying about my football. So I got on the course. I was able to learn a lot more. You know, I learned a lot more about the writing side and the laws and what you can write, can't write, and different little things about that open your eyes, basically. So it was something that I was interested in that I did, not because it's going to get you a job, because ultimately, you know, how many of the pundits that have played hundreds of games in the Premier League have got a journalism degree? It doesn't matter. It's unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's elitist that the higher you've played, the more chance you've got of getting a job. But I just did it for myself because it's something I was interested in and I wanted to learn. And ultimately, regardless of what I choose to do afterwards, I've got a degree in, you know, in journalism. So even though I wasn't to be a football journalist, I can go and write about, you know, the local rag about what's happening in Sutton Coldfield or something like that. But for me, it was an interesting thing that I wanted to stimulate my mind that at that age, and it worked out well that coming back to the Midlands, rather than it be I was in Hull and then having to travel to Stafford, to Stoke for the uni, and then I'm still going to London to see my oldest daughter, being in Birmingham, being in my base there with my wife, being near a family and things like that, and my youngest child being able to be looked after, it made it a lot easier to choose to do the course. And with it being at home learning, it was perfect. And I'm really glad I did the degree because, like I say, in my family, none of us have gone to uni and got degrees. So for me to get a degree and also pass with first class honours is a massive deal for my family, regardless of my football achievements.
Well, even now, as you end your football career, or it comes close to ending, you're still impressing your family with all your achievements. Mate, I've absolutely found it enthralling. I know I've gone on a bit tonight. It's gone on longer than any of the others. Enthralling. It's been amazing. Curtis, thanks for joining us on the Games Gone podcast, mate. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Just to remind everybody, Curtis Davis, if you've enjoyed it, leave us a review. Good, bad, or indifferent, we need your reviews. But thanks for being with us, and we'll see you soon. Take care.